And we are back with an all new episode of Keep It, maybe the first official episode of Keep It 2022, because I'm Ira Madison III, and I am finally joined by everybody.
Woof. Including her? Including her?
Hello! I'm Aida Osman. What's up?
Oh, my God.
Miss you guys. Trios reunited.
And I controversially remain Louis Vertel, even in spite of the ever-changing lineup here. We're like Fleetwood Mac.
How are you feeling, Louis, after having to host two episodes by yourself?
I'm incredibly cocky. I don't need either of you, and I'm ready to, I don't know, nothing. It turns out I have no improvisational skills, so I need you.
Who knew?
I sense a coup coming. I sense a coup coming.
Who knew a white man could hold down the workforce?
Right. I've been waiting for us to step up, and finally we did. Yeah.
White labor in 2022. That's what we're exploiting.
I was saying earlier, I accidentally had the first all-white episode of Keep It a couple of weeks ago, which is not a milestone, but it did happen.
On our show it is.
It was lovely, you know. I enjoyed you all talking about hummus and chickpeas and Mary Lou Henner.
Yes. Oh, ketchup, that came up. Right, yeah.
But we are all back. Aida is alive. You've
hello.
You've returned to America.
Made it, guys. The stories I have. I don't know who knows, but I had to go back home to handle some affairs. And by home, I don't mean Nebraska. I mean the continent of Africa. And I was in Eritrea for a couple of weeks with my family. And I already told the boys this, but you guys should know we are never getting out of this pandemic as long as people are selling fake negative COVID tests in Istanbul. And then also countries are giving false positives to up the tourism rates in their country and trap hundreds of people in their hotels. Guys, we're never leaving. We're never leaving the pandemic.
Wow. That's like real paranoid thriller shit.
Yeah.
I mean, you've also got here in New York, Sarah Palin running around doing indoor dining with her positive ass.
Right.
Which, oh, my God.
I want to point out, too, it's not just her. And I want you all listening at home to look deep into your soul, deep into your Instagram, deep into your phone contacts. Call some bitches out. Because I want to say, I maybe know three people who tested positive for COVID and we're still out and about.
Did a front handspring right to the deli.
I feel like it's not just the exhaustion from COVID. You know, like we all exhausted, okay?
Yeah.
You know, some of us have been working through this entire time too, you know. So like I'm feeling like a single mother.
Okay. Right. Yeah.
But I want to say that like I think the addition of the vaccines, right, and boosters, where now people literally feel like, oh, everyone's just going to get Omicron, and it's not as dire as putting you in the hospital as it was like original recipe COVID in 2020, when I can't believe I was leaving the house, even to go to the grocery store. Now people feel like if it's just going to be that, you know, like we might as well just, you know, pop out to a dinner, you know, if I have it and I don't feel horribly sick anymore like I did the previous day. And it's like they assume too that everyone around them has it or has had it.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
I recently heard someone saying, like, you know, the sooner we all get it, the sooner we can establish this herd immunity and we'll make it through.
No.
Bitch, you are not Clara Barton. Okay, you have no understanding of the medical field. You don't know what the fuck you're doing. Shut up, sit your ass home with your asymptomatic ass. I get so,
oh my God, that's treacherous. I love people pretending they understand, they know anything, literally about anything. People are not interested in information. They just want to sound sure. I can reflect back on when I had COVID about a year ago. The annoying thing specifically about it is, so you reach out to like friends who have it or whatever, and you compare notes and what you're going through. Here's the thing. Nobody's going through the same thing. It's like, it doesn't hit anybody the same way. So to go out into the world and pretend like, oh, well, if I infect somebody else, they'll just, this benign thing will happen to them. You have no idea what will happen to them.
No, I traveled with a friend too, and it's like it turned out like they had it, and like they thought that I had it because like I was sick, but I kept testing negative in terms of what I had was a cold. Like a literal actual cold.
We've all forgotten those happen.
I'm like, you forget that you can get sick again through other things.
Mm-hmm. There's diversity in this area, right?
We didn't get colds forever because we were all staying in our fucking houses and people were wearing masks. And now, guess what? When you're back out and intermingling with people, it's not just COVID you got to worry about. You got to worry about the fact that people just don't have good hygiene. And you will get sick from their germs. So take your vitamin C. Take your vitamin D. Take every vitamin, okay? Take your Vitamita Benjamin.
That's right. And also listen to Vitamin C, who's now a music executive at Nickelodeon, if you remember the graduation song.
Because we will not be friends forever if I find out that you're out dining while you got COVID, okay? Okay, giving me, like, it's, I feel like I have the itch whenever I go out.
Remember the 7-strain itch. Oh, the ish. No. Oh, my God. You really just blew
vitamin
my mind.
Vitamin C, the itch.
Yeah. Woo.
Her bop. I know four things about vitamin C. The Nickelodeon thing, best friends forever graduation song, the itch, and that she was one of the leads in Dracula 2000.
Which, as you know, that's when Dracula peaked. Bram Stoker said, wait 100 years. It's going to get really good.
I'm going to let y'all keep running this back like I know who this is. My modern parallel, is it like a Victoria Justice? What's going on? Mm. Is that the kind of person?
Yeah, Vitamin C was like basically a one-hit wonder with red hair. That's why she was called Vitamin C.
Oh, she was very horrible name. Yes, horrible branding.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I got it.
By the time you were like graduating, they moved on to other songs to play besides her song, graduation song, Friends Forever. Mm. I feel like I went through 3 different graduation songs. There definitely grew up in the I Believe I Can Fly era.
Oh, sure.
And then Vitamin C hit. And I'm pretty sure there was like another one. But into every generation, a graduation song is born.
Right. And then, but then sometimes if there's nothing extremely new happening in that area, you revert back to Green Day Time of Your Life and you have to listen to that.
Yeah, I was going to say there's definitely a Coldplay thing running up my mind. Maybe it's 21 Miles. It's a song. It's a song where they go through the years and they talk about graduating. Anyway, pop punk always wins.
Well, speaking of graduation, I am excited that in a bit we are going to do a little segment Aida dubbed Since You've Been Gone.
I've been listening to Kelly Clarkson a lot lately.
You know, because it's time to check in on what we've all been consuming while none of us have been collectively here. And I know Lewis is going to be talking about Yellow Jackets. And
right. Mm-hmm.
I finished it finally yesterday. And now all I want to do is listen to The Offspring.
Offspring first.
Would come out and played in that finale. I was like, wait a second. The TRL jumped out.
Yes. Oh, please. No, Offspring, the first band I had 3 CDs by. Because, by the way, they weirdly had crossover appeal to everyone.
Mm-hmm. So we will be talking about the culture we've been consuming. We're also going to discuss a documentary about this little-known pop
boutique
star.
Artist.
Yes, Janet Jackson.
Yes.
Oh, you're calling it a documentary. I guess it did document something.
Oh, wow.
You know what?
D.A. Panabaker here with the hot takes.
We will also be joined by one of my favorite artists, a friend of mine and a friend of Keep It, because he actually listens to this damn show.
What's
Moses
wrong with
Sumney.
Him? Yeah. All right. Great. We enjoy his music.
And I am going to ask, like, because, like, his, you know, artistic, ethereal ass, I'm like, what are you doing listening to us?
Yeah, we're
exactly
not,
too.
There's no halo around anything we do. Yeah, no.
I don't know. Before he poses shirtless in a river, he listens to us bitch about celebrities. I love that. I love imagining that.
All right, we will be right back with more Keep It. As America's first idol once sang, since you've been gone, here's the thing. I've been wondering what you've been streaming.
That's such a strange verse in that song. It really takes a detour.
She was ahead of the curve, okay? Yeah. She knew streaming
was coming.
She knew
she would have a day show. And she knew she'd have a day show. She mm-hmm. knew.
Behind these hazel mm-hmm. eyes, I can't stop watching Hulu, she said.
Yes.
Oh my
but,
God.
Aida.
Yes.
It's been a long time, and you've left it's us without a dope beat to step to. Step to.
Oh, God.
So why don't you tell us what you've been watching first?
Weirdly enough, Step Up 2. So that's perfect. I've been watching, and Step Up 3, The Streets. I did watch
Step Up 2, actually, over the course
you
of this
did?
Break. I watched Step
TCM?
Up.
TCM?
I watched Step Up. Yeah. Yeah.
Ben Mankiewicz and, explaining this backstory to Step Up 2.
And then, as much as I was a fan of that franchise, I tried to dip a friend of mine into Step Up 3D and Step Up 4, and I had to apologize. And I said, you know what? I didn't know what I was thinking. Those movies are bad.
Also, I guess those movies are our Jaws. There's literally a terrible 3D element to one of them. Anyway.
What have I been consuming, watching? Well, for the 3-4 weeks that I feel like I was in an internetless, I don't want to call it a wasteland because it's Africa and I love it, but for lack of a better term, wasteland. I couldn't stream anything. But when I got home, I immediately started watching Abbott Elementary.
Oh, which I hear is amazing.
It is. It's yes. really good.
Quinta Brunson is an icon. We just got to point that
creator,
out.
Creator. You know, we've loved her forever. My mm-hmm. first memory of Quinta is like her movie theater BuzzFeed videos. Where yes. it's like, oh, he got money.
My
and
first memory of her
part
is,
of my lexicon.
Is working at BuzzFeed with her.
Oh, wow.
I really want to point out that like, people who haven't listened to like the earlier Keep It's probably miss like when I make a joke about working at BuzzFeed. And when I reference it now, I feel like people are like, what? You used to work there? I want to point out that like a lot of people who you sort of really like on the internet now somehow inexplicably worked at BuzzFeed from like 2013 to 2016. It right. was like the place people on the internet were working. And it's really mm-hmm. weird now to imagine that people were like clamoring to get a job at BuzzFeed now.
Right, right.
Dying to.
It's like I mean, in Living Color for people who use the word bussy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. You know what? I'd like to think of me and Quinta as fly girls.
By the way, we're going to come back to fly girls later in my Keep It, so foreshadowing.
Oh, my God. Well, you got a lot to say in your Keep It, baby. Yeah.
I think we all have one of those under our belts, too. I mean, I know you worked at BuzzFeed. I know you worked at Daily Beast. I worked at Complex before I got any real TV writing job. And yeah, I've never even told you guys that. I've been hiding and tucking that away in the labyrinth of embarrassment. But yeah, I did. I talked about sneakers and men mostly. So we have our shames.
I feel like Complex only writes about sneakers, Drake, Rihanna, and sometimes Kanye.
Rihanna, my Keep It. So there we go. Oh, I'm right. so wow. excited to have this focus. Okay, Quinta, the show. It's just funny to watch Quinta be a foot taller than a group of kindergartners, first of all. That's the most entertaining thing. Very aware of it. She jokes about her height a lot. It's still its first season of television. It's figuring it out. But if you like Parks and Rec and you like The Office and you wish black people were the leads of those shows, Abbott Elementary is a great place to start. It's about her being a teacher in a underfunded inner city school in Philadelphia, which I guess it's kind of redundant. All the schools in Philadelphia are underfunded. That's
Girl,
the first thing I've been watching.
People from Philly are probably about to blow up your mansion.
Okay, well, they could just shut up and watch Bel Air. Y'all will have your representation. That's the next thing that I've been watching that, okay, we're all fans of Selling Sunset. I know because, you know, Crystal is a friend of the pod, mm-hmm. Friend to the girls. But Selling Tampa. Wow. Mm. I don't know if are you guys watching this show yet?
Girl, I watched it.
Ooh. It's not dramatic at all. These bitches are not petty enough for me. But black success is through the roof. Okay. If you want to watch black women supporting one another and like just dressing nicely and like baby hair is not out of place at all, like wavy baby hairs look like the Constitution type shit, then go ahead and watch Selling Tampa. But just know that it's not as entertaining as it is fulfilling and enriching. But it's a real estate show about these women selling houses, making million-dollar commissions. You have to love it. It's good fun. It's good
okay,
fun.
Okay, but can we point out that Sherelle is maybe the worst boss that has ever existed?
But why?
She is...
But why?
Okay, I'm sorry. You are not going to bring me to a meeting and tell me that you're cutting my commissions by like 10% and expect there to not be a conversation to be had about
it. Yeah, it was kind of fascist.
And she talks too much about her employees behind their back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's a little petty, but she's kind. She's kind. She pays for the drinks at the lunch bars. She.
I assume this is not the same Sherelle from Saturday Love. I assume it's not the same.
No, Lewis. She didn't get her real estate license.
She's revamping. Yeah.
You never know.
It's Cassavetes' film that you're dreaming of. I love Selling Tampa, but I do have a bone to pick with it because what I loved about Selling Sunset is like the glamour, and I just there's no glamour in Tampa, and it would have been different if now I'm gonna have people from Tampa in my mentions, but if you live in Tampa, you know it's trash.
They're resigned to your fate. Yeah.
Right.
Lewis, you better pick a city to have against you by the end of the podcast. Okay, yeah. Okay? I've got Philly. I've got Tampa. Mm-hmm.
But the beauty of Selling Sunset is like the glamour and the houses and the celebs and everything. And I feel like we were just sold Selling Tampa was going to be like the black version of that, right? But it's really about they're trying to get this brokerage off the ground so they can have more glamorous clients, you know? And so I felt like I was promised one thing and got another thing. If I knew it was about this woman trying to build like this all black brokerage, I would have been like on board from it, you know? What you need to watch and keep it frequent guest host Ray Saadi put me onto this. Ladies Who List Atlanta, that is giving glamour. It's petty and it's giving Selling Sunset glamour.
That title, by the way, 100.
Ladies Who List Atlanta.
Ladies Who List. In the same way that it can be Selling Sunset, but their show should be called Trying to Sell Tampa.
Right. They're trying to sell. Slowly. They had a whole episode about them having to go to Miami to try and get like some more clientele. And I was like, we need to just be watching Selling Miami.
Yeah, that's what we need.
Real estate shows, though, of any kind, like I feel like once you start on them, it's like the brain smoothiest massage ever. Like you just can't get away from just wanting to look at nice places.
Mm-hmm. I do like nice places in those shows. I, for some reason, have never been able to get into beyond the early days of like Trading Spaces. I can't get into other like home improvement or like sort of like fix it up shows.
I was an HGTV girl. Like I was single-handedly funding that whole network, Property Brothers, flip any show. I thought at like 15 I was going to be flipping houses. I tried to go to seminars. It was just the money. The money and the clean modern looks. I wanted it.
The only thing I know about Property Brothers is the one is with Zooey Deschanel, and there's that one episode where Alice and Janney, for some reason, is on wearing like an evening gown and holding an axe. Anyway, I don't know why fate gave this to me, but I did watch the entire episode, and now I think Alice and Janney is unwell.
Isn't that just how she goes to Chaconi's on a Friday night?
I guess. No, and she's, of course, 11 foot four, so she's like ducking under doorways to get in.
And also, don't we miss Ty Pennington? Am I the only one?
I do miss when celebrities were just burnt umber. They were like so tan.
Like leather skin.
Yeah, and which is a very 2000s phenomenon. Yeah, kind of like Original Recipe Seacrest, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh my God. I'm looking at photos of Ty Pennington. Ty Pennington was serving. Oh my God. The era where you would wear a polo underneath a denim jacket with the sleeves rolled up.
Oh yeah,
I'm horny.
Tips bleached to oblivion. Ooh,
the very old Navy. Yes, vintage Navy.
What else? What else, Aida?
Love Life on HBO Max. Yes. Okay. It's in a second season now, but I don't know if you guys are familiar with the format, but it's a unique enough show that each episode follows. And I watched the second season with William Jackson Harper, who I just call Chidi for the rest of my life because he plays Chidi on Good Place. The format of the show, like I said, is unique enough. It's like every episode follows one of his romantic endeavors, and we don't actually get to see any of the interstitial intermediate life that he lives. Every episode just picks up on his new person that he's seeing. So hence Love Life. Jessica Williams pops up and she plays a cool, stylish black girl, which we don't get enough of on television. and enjoyed it. Enjoyed it. It's fun. It's cute. He dates white women, so he experiences turmoil. And he dates black women, so he experiences rebirth. There's a lot there. I would recommend it. It's fun.
He experiences turmoil.
I have a vendetta against Love Life because Lewis and I have a mutual friend named Steven who continued to try to foist the original version of it with Anna Kendrick on me.
All right.
Constantly. There'd just be texts about Love Life. And so I have refused.
Was even he a producer?
No, he just watched it. He's just a gay white man. And you know how pushy they are.
About their opinions on television shows.
Oh my God. My friend and I were just talking about how much we miss the word pushy and characters on TV who would be described as pushy. Like the fourth female lead was always the pushy one, you know, like Facts of Life or whatever.
Yeah, she was a plot device. Yes. She was needed.
But maybe I will check it out. Friend of Keep It, Solomon Giorgio, wrote and produced on Love Live Season 2.
Meanwhile, name a show he didn't fucking write on, so anyway.
Truly. Okay? He probably wrote Love It or List It Atlanta. Okay?
So those are the shows I've been watching, Ira.
Oh, you've done a lot of watching, actually, for not having access to that stuff.
No, I was going to say, it's been a lot of work, but I'm willing to do it.
You know what? I've been watching a lot of shows. I finally finished Yellow Jackets, which Lewis and I can chat about.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Before that, I want to say I've been watching a lot of shows through memes.
Gathering what they're about via the meme and then going to actually watch them?
Because I've reached a point where it's like there always used to be someone's like, how do you keep up with so much? And now I just no longer want to keep up with so much. So like, and just like that, I watched the first two episodes. I am purely watching the show through memes.
Oh, yeah.
I have no idea what happens episode to episode, but I am just like gathering what happens by what ends up in my like Instagram feed or like, you know, in like Hunter Harris's newsletter.
Right. I did. I think I watched up to episode 7 of And Just Like That. And I feel like there's something every episode that I'm like gratified that I got a little bit of a taste of the thing I love about the original show, which is generally speaking the performances of the actresses on it. But then there's always some element that is like slightly the wrong note that makes me think, because like Sex and the City is such a perfect comfort show. Like everything about it, like the dialogue, the situations are just like fun. And so when they recreate the show and anything is even slightly different, whether or not it's good or bad, I have to clutch a wall because like it's like they changed my baby formula, you know.
And that was made you the killer in Scream 5.
Right. Yes. But like the episode where Carrie gets a new, or she's like shopping for a new apartment and she ends up in, it was such a CGI paradise wherever they shot it. It looked like the Brandy What About Us video or something. Just fucking stick.
She holding an aluminum bat.
Yeah. Remember when every music video looked like that? Just like cartoony.
A CGI tunnel.
Yeah.
A CGI tunnel with wind blowing through it. Yes.
Every Destiny's Child video. Yeah.
Everybody thought they had a Janet Jackson budget, but they did not.
Right. Yes.
That's the problem. Yeah.
I've also listened. I love Euphoria, and I watched all of season one. I actually binged all of season one at once, and I will get to season two eventually. But currently, I am also only watching season two of Euphoria through memes.
Right. Now, here's my question. I've only seen season one of Euphoria. Here's my question about the characters. Can somebody pick these kids up? Jesus, somebody find a car and throw them in it. Yeah. I feel like Holly Hunter in 13 watching these kids. I'm like, oh my God, my sweet baby.
I knew the show was going to be all over the internet. One, it's Euphoria, but they did a trailer for every single character. And I was like, this is episode one. Why would I watch anything else? You did a trailer for every single character. I'm excited to see Dominic Fike on the show, who apparently is dating Hunter Schafer in real life.
Okay. I love that. I mean, they're still my favorite people to follow on Instagram. So, you know.
Yeah.
The girls are delivering. And they're delivering in the memes, too. And I'm sure the show will be delivering iconically. So.
How do you feel about faggots flocking to Sydney Sweeney the way they have? Do we trust that?
What's with y'all in big boobs is my big question.
Oh, you think that's it?
I think that's a big part of it. And blondes, ugly crying. Y'all love that.
That's true. I do like Sydney Sweeney, but you know, I mean, Alexis Demi is my girl. Alexa Demi is my girl. You know? And mm-hmm. you know, there's, and then there's, you know, well, you got, and then you got Barbie. Come on, you got Barbie, and you got Z, and you got Hunter Schafer, and you know, I'm just like, there's a wealth. I don't have anything against Sydney Sweeney though. So okay, I don't even know what she's probably been turning up this season. You know, looking like Renaissance paintings at the end of episodes or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah,
I saw that meme. I saw that meme, and I don't know what the fuck happened in it, but it looked cute.
I just want to say, by the way, that I ran into Lucas Gage at like some club recently, and he came up to me and immediately started talking to me about Housewives. I guess because he talks to you about Housewives. I just wanted to tell him, Lucas Gage, that's not my brand. You got to stop this right now. So anyway, I turned him away glamorously in front of people I know. It was really fun.
I'm sorry to adversely affect your life, Lewis, by having a hot Hollywood actor come up to you and talk to you about Bravo.
I started weeping on sight. Yeah, it was terrible. I want to get into Yellow Jackets for a second. Quickly, when this show started, I have never felt more aggressively courted by a show. First of all, the casting, which of course gives you every hard girl from the 90s, including Melanie Lynskey, who we love from Heavenly Creatures, Juliette Lewis, who most children know from that video she made asking, can you save us Britney Spears? But actually, she's an Academy Award nominee from like Cape Fear and was a child actor all her own. Christina Ricci, the first actress I was ever obsessed with because she was Wednesday in the Addams Family, but she has other good roles like Opposite of Sex and Monster and stuff. Here's my problem with this show. I do not care about survivalist shit. I don't care about who can shoot an arrow the best. That's my weird problem. Mm. I get the adult part. I like survivors of trauma stuff, but anything where they're in the woods and there's like a macabre humor element to we're all eating each other, it weirdly does not speak to me, and I'm surprised. I actually find that part of the show a little boring, and I'm surprised people have stuck through it through all that stuff. But I guess people love that shit.
I'm going to shock you, Lewis, and say that I love Yellow Jackets, and I largely finished it by fast-forwarding through the flashback stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't
the
do
stuff
it for
with,
me.
The stuff with the crash is just very expected,
like every show like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that the flashes are forward to when they're adults, because I like seeing these like adults like just fuck shit up, and it's sad because I love the younger actors too, you know, but it's just
yeah, they're
giving
good
me that, like, it's giving me this like there are a couple twists that like I didn't see coming, but other than like the twist, it's just sort of like everything happening you know, during like the survivalist stuff is just really sort of like, okay, can we get back to like the grown-ups?
Yeah, right.
Unfortunately.
The actors we trust, yes. Yeah. But I want to say, obviously, the other star of this show, quote-unquote star, is the music choices. That's how I felt aggressively courted. Within seconds of me starting the show, they're throwing down like Liz Phair and PJ Harvey. And it's like, I understand that's like a genre of music. It's not like, it's crazy that both of those musicians would apply to me. But man, you do not hear that music on many TV shows. So to like really zap into that alternative 90s thing that like, we think we have good memories of the 90s, but I don't hear like anybody talking about PJ Harvey anymore. So I'm just psyched to hear that, to hear Hole, to hear in an interview later, one of the creators saying, we didn't get to include Tori Amos this season. We'll do it next season. Fuck yes. You never hear Tori Amos on these shows. So I'm
super
grateful.
I was shocked to hear Republica's Ready to Go.
Yeah, right.
A song from Our Youth that was largely just featured in commercials.
Right. This is, children, you may remember when you couldn't turn on the television and hear any track off Moby's play. It's like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the music is great. The theme song is fucking great. And, you know, I think people are excited to, you know, to fan cast who's going to be an adult version in season two. And, you know, and I love the younger actors. They're fucking great. And it's sad that, like, they're going to have to be stuck in the, like, the survivalist, like, whatever thing, because I would love to see those actors play what happens, you know, when they get out of the woods. I'd like to see that shit, you know, the part of them, like, adjusting to life again, but not adjusting to it, and then flashing forward to the present.
Right.
But unfortunately, it's like two shows in one, you know, and you're always going to have to get the survivalist stuff, because I feel like that's the Yellow Jackets, you know, like, vibe.
Right, because secretly I think the most interesting part of the movie Room is when Brie Larson gets out of the room and then she's suicidal, like that kind of, so I'm excited to get into that stuff also.
Yeah. Also, the only other thing I've been doing, you know, obviously I've been in New York for a while now. Been seeing a lot of theater, you know.
Oh, you don't say.
Oh,
you know, that's what I do.
You?
Some very good standouts that I saw were, first of all, this musical Kimberly Akimbo, which I hope is going to Broadway. It's so fucking amazing. And like the performances were really great. It's sort of like, it's about a girl with the same disease that Robin Williams has in Jack.
Oh, right. Which was a documentary. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Why did nobody in Drag Race dressed as that Jennifer Lopez anyway? She's in that, right? It's her.
Yeah. Jennifer Lopez is in that, okay? Yeah, and Jennifer Lopez is in a Francis Ford Coppola movie, okay? Right.
Thank you, history. Thank you.
All right. When will your faves?
Remember she was in U-Turn? She had so many chapters we've forgotten all about. Anyway.
The disease is a little bit like progeria. You know, it causes her to age 4.5 times fast as normal. It is set while she's in high school, about to hit her 16th birthday, and most people, you know, die around that age. But it was written by David Lindsay Abaire.
Oh, my God. King of Rabbit Hole.
I know, you know? And the music was by Janine Tesori, who is basically an icon. Janine Tesori is a Broadway composer, and she's done the music for Carolina Change, which I also saw before it closed on Broadway. It's fucking iconic. She did Thoroughly Modern Millie. You know, she is an icon as well. It's a really, really great fucking show, and I hope it transfers. I saw Clyde's with Uzo Aduba.
Oh, how is she on stage?
You know, I mean, I don't think she can act, you know, it's just sort of, you know, like one day she'll show us that she's fantastic. I'm kidding. Obviously, Uzo is an icon. She's an icon. Is in a play by Lynn Nottage, who was just doing too much.
Two Pulitzers.
Also, her play Intimate Apparel was turned into an opera by the Met. And unfortunately, I wish it had not been.
Oh, no. That's an interesting choice.
Yeah. It's a fantastic and sexy play, but I'm just like, and I love the opera. I'm actually sort of mad that I missed seeing Rigoletto in this current run at the Met, and I'm going to have to see it later in the spring. But yeah, it's the music is, I kept thinking about that Sondheim thing where he was discussing, you know, like each song should be like, especially in Tick, Tick, Boom, when he's talking to Andrew Garfield, talking to Jonathan Larson.
Yes.
About how each song, you know, should be like a different character, you know, like, and it's just like the music in Intimate Apparel, the opera version, is just very one note. It all sort of sounds the same. And for such an interesting act one, once you get to act two, it's just sort of a thing where like the plot's been set up already and you're just sort of going through bullet points to wrap it up at the end, you know? So unfortunately did not need to be an opera. I am sorry. But the
Keep It Opera will be better than this, I have to say. You won't repeat the same note. The guest hosts, yeah, the deaths, it'll be great.
The regular host will be vanishing at random intervals. You know, it's a lot of mystery.
Yeah, that's okay? What we needed. That's what it sounds like it's missing.
This show is Yellow Jackets. All right, I think we're sufficiently caught up with one another and what we've been catching up with. When we're back, we will be joined by Moses Sumney. And then a little bit later, we're going to get into Miss Jackson, if you're nasty, because I am.
Save big money in your next painting project now at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect finish for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. Save big on Dutch Boy paints. Plus, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and get your painting project started today. Save big.
Our guest today is a truly independent artist because he does whatever the hell he wants. He left LA for North Carolina, has repeatedly rejected labels and reps, and his second album, Gray came out mid-pandemic, and his first concert film, Blackalachia, came out in December. Please welcome Moses Sumney.
We're clapping. We're clapping. Hey. It's snapping. Hello. Hello, Moses.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. You can't see, but I'm wearing a turtleneck, so the snapping as an intro is like super, super appropriate. Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you. Aida and I were having a discussion before, and I think I probably asked you this before, but you know, you are so smart, and you have so many like luminaries and authors who want to be on your albums. So we're like, why the hell have you ever listened to us?
Yeah, why do you enjoy this mess? Huh?
I know, it's funny. This Keep It is kind of the only podcast I listen to, and sometimes people ask me like, what do you listen to? I've got this philosophy podcast that I love, and you want to hear about Descartes, and I'm like, I listen to Keep
Therefore
It.
therefore I am
exactly. I love it. It's funny. Y'all are so fucking funny,
Moses. That warms my heart so much. Like, I usually try not to gush over our guests because apparently our listeners hate it, but I love the ground that you walk on. Is like, you're one of my favorite musicians and just instrumentalist people in the music world, and I'm so honored that you're here. And I have a bone to pick with you because yeah, most of your songs make me seek out love, and it's ruining my life. Truly ruining my life. Yeah.
That's ironic, but I think you just gotta let it come to you. Why are you seeking love? They should be coming to you.
But I just want to make out.
Love should be coming to you. We like to feel things. I guess the music is very heavily emotional. So people come to me, not so much when they want to dance, but when they want to cry, I guess. And I've accepted it.
Yeah,
I'm
have
sorry.
To be emotionally stable to watch like your Tiny Desk video. Like, I can't be in a not okay place because there will be tears. There will be tears.
But there's some joy in there too. I'd like to think that wrapped in the melancholy is a good amount of joy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to ask then, you know, you people come to you for the melancholy a bit. What do you do when you want, you know, the joy, when you want to dance? Or do you dance to your own music?
I do dance to my own music. I be thinking that shit fucking bangs. Like, it doesn't. But in my head, it does. I think, you know, a lot of the rhythm in my music is implied, and I hear and feel implied rhythm. So I actually do dance to my music. But I listen to a lot of upbeat stuff. I listen to, funny enough, a lot of hip-hop and R&B more than one might think, but in my car there's a lot of Brandy, there's a lot of Usher, there's a lot of Nicki when I'm trying to dance. So I do listen to like cerebral. I have, you know, quite an eclectic mix of things in my ears, I guess, but I like the cerebral stuff, you know. I like the emo stuff, the, I don't know, the Sufjans and whatnot, but I like fun stuff. I'm fun.
Scream it. Let us know. Make sure.
I'm really fun and I like to dance.
No, I mean, I feel like, I mean, first of all, the Sufjans is how I got into you in the first place. Mm-hmm. Now you're making art exhibits.
I've definitely been trying to step outside of what my boxes or whatever sandbox I've been told I'm allowed to play in. And I get a little bored with approaching music from a kind of traditional perspective. And yeah, and I think that story for me cuts across disciplines. It's been really important. And I'm sure y'all can relate to this because y'all be doing a lot of things. Some might say the most. I think that for me, I have a story to tell, and the story is, I have a story to tell, and the story sometimes has to manifest as a song, or has to manifest as a photograph, or manifest as a film, or as an installation. And I don't know, once I figure out what it is I'm trying to say and what questions I'm trying to ask, then I approach it with the discipline that feels the most appropriate, or the medium that feels the most appropriate for the question itself. And so right now we have the show, we being me and my multiple personalities, launching this gallery show at Nicola Vassal Gallery this month. That's going to be an installation of my film that I made, Black Alashia, which is a performance film, but then a bunch of photographic prints, my first kind of like photographs on film being shared. And that all feels like part of the MCU, the Moses Cinematic Universe.
I love it. I love that you feel like you're in a space where you can freely like oscillate between whatever medium that you want to be working in. But in the songwriting and like album ideation world, are you in the process? Are you the kind of musician and creator that is constantly like writing tidbits for songs or thinking about what the next album is going to be? Or do you like to shelve it until you're ready to start?
I'm a little bit of both. Like, I've been kind of taking a break from writing new stuff lately because I just kind of got tired and I got a little bit too in my head. So I took over the course of the pandemic, I stopped writing songs and I started photographing instead and like directing films. And that was my creative outlet. And that kind of gave me a chance to reapproach like what I really wanted to do. You know, stepping outside of like, all right, this next record has to turn around very quickly. Mm. In between my first two albums, I think I turned in my first album and then I started writing the second one a week later.
Wow.
And so now I'm just kind of moving a bit slower and with more intention, but I've definitely been ideating on what the next record sounds like. And I'll get in a room with a producer and I start by saying, I'm not making an album. I'm not making another album. And they're like, uh-huh, cool. We're gonna hit record quick, great. And that just like frees me to do whatever I want without being like, and the next record has to be very conceptual. You know, mm-hmm. I've done like two kind of conceptual albums. So now I'm like, can I just be a dumb bitch a little bit in the booth and see what that does? Yeah, that's kind of like my journey now.
That's fair.
I mean, what I've also loved too is, you know, just the idea that you're not just stepping into art, the art world, you know, whatever that means, you know, like having like an exhibit in New York, but you're really fascinated by photographs, or at least I'm fascinated by your photographs, not photographs that you take and like pictures that you are into. I mean, you take gorgeous fucking photos. You're on a billboard in New York right now for Calvin Klein.
Amazing.
Giving model.
Looking stunning.
But also, I think you just shared on Instagram, like another Instagram of just like photographs that you take mm-hmm. when you're around now. And what really inspired you to just sort of be like, I want to start taking photos of, you know, my friends, like people I interact with and like my general life, and sort of like try and frame it in this different way than I feel mm-hmm. like we generally take photos for Instagram with like a phone. Mm.
Yeah, thank you for asking that. I've always been into taking pictures, but I think for years I felt like Instagram as a medium wasn't really deserving of them. I think that we kind of treat imagery, especially on social media, as cheap treats. And I really treasure the pictures that I take of other people. And yeah, I try to photograph on film, which I think the kind of archaic tactile nature of film really drives home the fact that you're making a record of something, you're making a record of a moment in time. And you also, because of the finite nature of film, have to be very particular about what moments you capture, you know, because that's just going to run out. So just like, oh, wait, this is a moment. And it really helps to remember that. So it's been really important to me to document having been here. And I also like the kind of, I think my work tends to paint such a solitary image of me. Believe it or not, I do have a friend or two. And so I like I enjoy the juxtaposition of like, oh, here's some pictures I took of other people when they allowed me to be around them. But I also, to that end, have a pretty dedicated self-portraiture practice that I've been delved deeply in for the past couple of years. And I'm just now kind of starting to find ways to put that imagery out in the world and think beyond the box, so to speak, of Instagram. Mm-hmm.
You're an artist. You've probably always felt as if you were an artist and was expressing yourself in that way. But like, what were some of your earliest modes of communication with art? Was it always music? Was it photography? And you know, how strongly did you feel those from a young age?
Definitely music was my first powerful relationship with art. And I feel like music is at the intersection of everything I do. But as a kid, growing up in California, I was obsessed with country music for some reason. I don't know why this little African kid in California was obsessed with like Tim McGraw and Faith Hill and a bit of Shania and Garth Brooks. But that music was very precious to me. And I think I also loved reading, and maybe it's because I loved narrative so much as a child. And so I was also really into writing, and I used to write poems a lot and write little short stories. And I really didn't have friends at that age. I totally, totally, definitely do now.
Keep telling us.
Then, yes, I just want to reemphasize that.
George Glass.
This episode will be called Moses Has Friends, and y'all better believe it.
Well, you know, like, do you remember that show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend?
Yes. I think
there's that song where she's like, I have friends. I definitely have friends. I think about that all the time. But no, like my earliest art memories were music, but also writing. And I actually really wanted to be a writer my whole life. I mean, I really wanted to be a musician, but I didn't think I could. And not that I didn't think I could do it, but I couldn't share that. I couldn't be like, oh, I'm going to be a singer. Because I learned quickly that people are haters and will crush your dreams. And so I would always say, I'm going to be a writer. And I was very kind of forward with my writing. And then I went to college. I went to UCLA for creative writing. And that was always like my front. That was the storefront. And behind the storefront, I was in the lab.
Laundering songs. Yeah.
Exactly. Cooking songs like mesh.
Is that something that you still feel drawn to, writing like a longer piece of creative fiction? Or is it just like your mind, like focusing on like a story that long, it's like something you don't want to do?
I really am into creative nonfiction, and I think it would be a dream to write an essay, not write an essay. I've written essays, but write like a book of essays. I had my first essay published last month in an anthology that Michael Chabon edited for the ACLU about kind of the immigration story of my family. And that was amazing to write. I think that writing is actually, in a lot of ways, the thing I care about the most. And then it becomes the thing that I do the least, because I find it really scary. And I find that I care about it so much that it crushes me a little bit to do it. I don't know if that makes
total
sense.
Sense.
But y'all are writers.
Music.
Like, writing is so painful.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whatever you feel like is your most passionate thing, but it might be your least exercised mode of speaking. I don't know.
Yeah. And it's like, to the idea of sharing that work is so like, it's really painful. But I think that would be my dream, to write more creative nonfiction and do essay stuff.
Okay. Yeah. I want your like John Krakauer novel, you know? Like, you're into the wild, you're moving to California, the country music, and then getting out of California, because as we were establishing before this podcast, it's time to leave California.
Yeah, it's time for all
I'm
of
trying
us.
Trying to get Aida
let's
too.
Let's transplant.
What's going on?
Let's untransplant. I moved to LA for the podcast, and then maybe within 2 or 3 months, the world shut down. And then there was just the like constant decline of LA after that. So I don't actually have great associations with the city. I think it's time to move to New York, but or North Carolina.
I lured her
you
to LA.
God.
You did. I retract me.
You ruined her life.
Truly.
Oh, man. Yeah, you didn't get to experience like the great nothing that is Los Angeles.
Yeah. I was told it wasn't much. I did run into Ira at a Vincent concert, which was a beautiful experience. So we had our fun.
And you'll always have that.
Truly, us at the Troubadour, running into each other by the bar, maybe one of our only
and best moments.
That's our only sighting. Yeah,
frustrating.
Yeah. I leaving LA is one of the best things personally that I ever did for my mental health and self love.
Mm-hmm. But you know, then you also went the complete opposite of like, because you don't live in New York, you're based just like in the woods.
Yes, I live in a forest in the mountains in North Carolina.
You don't have, your music tells us that. I know, Moses.
I know, it's crazy. Like there are bears, like I see bears for a good amount of the year, like outside my house. Mm. And I'm like, that's who I'm kicking it with these days.
You're living in Yellow Jackets is what you're doing. Yeah. You are surviving on the wild. There.
Okay.
Are you a TV watcher?
I haven't seen that. I'm kind of an extreme TV watcher. I mean, there's really nothing to do where I live except hike and watch TV. So I watch a lot of television. I've not seen Yellow Jackets yet, but I am like I'm watching the new Ozark, which I remember you don't like.
Oh wow!
The pointed look. Proof. Okay, you know what? I've heard a lot of. I've mostly heard like, you know, like older white people who are like vibing for Jason Bateman and Lori Linney liking Ozark. But sometimes a random like black friend will be like, you know what I really ride for? It's Ozark. And I just want to know, what is it about Ozark that is pulling you in?
Oh my God.
Because it's too blue for me.
I think it's Moses' like colorway. That's his colorway though. Like,
no, it's not. No, I like very rich colors. Watch my little film.
No, you're right.
You see, I actually really like, I like rich colors. Listen, warmth. The skin is glowing. Like we like brown. Like, I mean, come on. I love warmth. But I just think that it's February. We as black people need to get into money laundering. Like,
okay.
I'm tired of these people taking our money.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, we need to be evading taxes and we need to be using offshore accounts to hide our money. That's how these people built generational wealth. And I'm trying to learn. So I watch Ozark with my pen and paper. My notepad is out. My post-it notes are going up. And I appreciate the tips.
You were in the trenches. You at
that's
school.
That's how we can.
You at school.
Yeah, that's how we can keep the dollar in the black community by money laundering.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. Run and tell that.
Who do you find yourself listening to musically right now? Like, who are you excited about? And
oh, okay. Well, I think two kind of newer artists that I really love and would recommend are Lorraine. That's L'Rain, a New York-based band that's fronted by this black woman. They're just excellent. It's like very esoteric indie music, but it's also very soulful. I adore them. That was my favorite record of last year. Although a strong shout out to Jasmine Sullivan, who I've loved since I was, it seems, a child, and makes me want to never sing ever, ever, ever again. Embarrassing. And then the other one I love is Kia. That's K-E-I-Y-A-A.
Love her.
She had a record in 2020 that was still in my top five.
I guess, Weary?
Oh, do you have forever Your Girl.
Last year.
Yeah.
That album was it. I love that.
Thank God for the girls playing on the NPCs, getting glitchy. That's what I'm really a fan of right now. And a lot of girls coming out of Brooklyn, I feel like, are just producing and creating. And it's making my little heart so happy. Another reason to go to Brooklyn. See, it's nothing for me in LA.
Girls on the glitch. Mm-hmm.
Girls on the
girls
glitch.
Girls for sure on the glitch.
Glitch hop.
I don't know. I guess those are younger people. I'm forgetting, like, the old heads that I like, you know.
No, these
Who
are
cares?
Good.
When suggestions. Are we getting your mixtape? I need a
oh,
mixtape.
Let's see. This is the thing. It's like, when are we getting music? Your book of essays? You know, it's maybe we should figure it out together. When are we getting that?
We can mm-hmm. trade. We can have a. We can drop on the same day your mixtape and my.
We should
book
do it.
This is so fun. Like, I can't believe it.
Oh, stop. Oh, shut up.
Thank you.
So
thank
happy
you for
to
having
have you.
Me. No, it's so like y'all should see me driving around in the mountains, like truly on dirt roads, listening to your It's a really funny image. So I can't wait to be on it. Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you.
In moments like these, it's easy to feel overwhelmed and even easier to feel powerless. But we are neither. I'm Stacey Abrams, and on my podcast, Assembly Required, I take on each executive action, legislative battle, and breaking news moment by asking three questions. What's really happening? What can we do about it? And how do we keep going together? This is a space for clarity, strategy, and hope rooted in action. Not denial. New episodes of Assembly Required drop Tuesdays. Tune in wherever you get your podcast and on YouTube.
Over the weekend, Lifetime released their authorized documentary on Janet Jackson, but despite diving into her relationship with her abusive father, her thoughts on her brother, and her career after the Super Bowl, the superstar still kept her cards close to her chest. I'm shocked, since it was an authorized documentary.
Yeah.
You know, I kept thinking about this in contrast with The Last Dance, which was authorized by Michael Jordan in a sense, but also it was like a lot of footage that was recorded and a deal was made that, you know, it could be aired later on, you know, like if he gave approval to it, you know, and like parts mm-hmm. of it sort of made him look like an asshole, you know?
Yeah,
and
right.
I think about, you know, we've talked about the David Foster documentary before where it made him really look like an asshole, but a talented one. And I'm not saying that I wanted Janet to look like an asshole, but I wanted Janet to speak her truth, you know? And I don't know, it's wild to me that we watch a documentary about her life and then like the Super Bowl and she's sort of like, you know, like I'm friends with Justin Timberlake and I wish we would all just move mm-hmm. on. And I'm like, okay, girl.
That's your truth? Right. the thing with Janet Jackson is, and I knew this going in, and this makes her much different than someone like Whitney Houston or Madonna. She is not an interview queen. Like, you don't come away from mm-hmm. an interview with Janet Jackson being lit on fire by personality. It's just, that's never the yeah. way it's been with her. And in fact, I'm almost certain that goes back to the fact that she's just someone who's been hammered for personal information since she was, like, truly single-digit age. So I'm sure interviews in general give her the creeps. And according to almost everybody in the documentary, she truly is a shy person. So you're not going to get like an unexpected level of candor from her at any time. But it is funny to hear her say things like, oh, I want to finally speak my truth. And her truth is what? Being thankful to the fans. Truly, when I think of Janet Jackson, I think of someone meekly thanking fans all the time. Like, that's just like, who she is. There are parts of this documentary that I think are great. Namely, I mean, the footage of her with Michael coming up with Scream.
Scream was okay. See, that scene was terrifying to me.
Yeah, she's on a laptop like typing lyrics and he's standing there telling her what she needs to bring to the track and hearing Michael Jackson. And of course, we have all done the math on Michael Jackson. Don't need to. We've unpacked what's wrong with him and what continues to be wrong with him, whatever. Man, it is still thrilling to hear Michael Jackson say to her, you got to bring that vocal you brought on Black Cat. Whoa. none of those other ones. Yeah, this yes. is a Black Cat vocal we need. Yeah.
Yes. Listen, I loved that moment and I found it thrilling, but I also found it, you know, like a bit weird and unsettling, just the way she talked about the recording of it, because it mm-hmm. seemed like she yeah. didn't want to make that damn song.
No, and she said it was like tough to do and they were kept apart on the music video set and stuff.
What was really interesting about the documentary to me was just how this woman's career was just sort of like adversely affected by the men around her. You know, like think about the Justin thing the most, mm-hmm. but... the here like how like she was superstar after like the first two flop albums and Out of Her Brother's Shadow. And then the Michael scandal starts at like literally on the eve of her signing a major deal with Coca-Cola. And that is just like, I'm like, fuck, you know? And then she has to go and support her brother and then has to do stuff like, you know, like say a prayer for Michael, like at a concert. And of course it's like 92. So like everyone's cheering back then, you know, right. No one is in the audience really like, what sis? and then, you know, having to go and make the song Scream. And it's just sort of like, get it real to see her as sort of like the icon in the first parts of the documentary and really like taking control of her own career to then see her slip into, basically, it was like Michael dictated that song to her, you know. It's like, even the staging of it with her, like, at the edge of the bed on her knees typing, when him sitting on the bed above her, you know, it's just sort of like it was sad seeing sort of, I guess, the different male figures in her life who exerted control over her, from Joe Jackson to Renee Michael.
Now, that to me was the most instructive part of the whole thing. Renee Elizondo, her husband, who, if you remember that cover of the Rolling Stone where her breasts are covered with hands, it's his hands. And he really jumps in and feels kind of like a, you know, Colonel Tom Parker to Elvis situation, where he's like making all these big choices and she's sort of meekly posing on the music video set where he makes all the big calls. He didn't seem dictatorial and he didn't seem like drunk with power or anything, but he did seem to be running the show in a way that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah, and then the documentary allowed it to seem like Janet's personality only came out through him.
Yeah.
Like it was necessary. And what frustrated me the most about the entire documentary is, everything that we're saying about this woman, you know, most of her life was characterized by trying to get out of the shadow of these men. And the documentary was full of just Googleable facts about her. I didn't really learn much new. The most frustrating thing was listening to her sit on that couch and say something like, well, you know, we have a history with CBS. Okay, girl, what is that history after the Super Bowl event? What is that history? Talk about how you felt blackballed by white media. Talk about how you felt targeted by journalists.
Call out Les Moonves. Okay, who are you afraid of?
Yes.
Julie Chen?
Do you feel abandoned by Justin Timberlake? Are y'all really friends like that? You said you only talked once after the Super Bowl incident. Like, there was never cracks in her armor. There was never anything that made me feel like I was learning about Janet and that she was giving. This documentary, they said it took 5 years to make, and it did not feel like that. It felt like it took 5 years to edit and cut out all the important and honest things, but it didn't feel like they actually put an earnest attempt to like exposing what happened in Janet's life.
I mean, we were lucky to get like real footage of time she's recording with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, because there's a part, I believe it's they're recording Rhythm Nation, and they straight up get into a fight where
when she like, storms out.
Yeah, she's trying to lay down a vocal and they're kind of like snickering. Maybe they don't think they're getting the take they want or something. But anyway, you actually see Janet dealing with a conflict there and like not being
Love
meek.
That.
And that is what we needed more of in the documentary, because also it's like Janet Jackson has made some of the best and most enduring pop music. And it's like, you know, she's not just a puppet sitting there making it. You know, she's like making lots of choices that are making it great. And in that moment, you see the fiery and kind of entrepreneurial version of Janet that I feel like the rest of the documentary sort of leaves out. So I wish if somebody just wants to upload all that shit to YouTube, like all the fuzzy footage of her in a recording studio, that I would love to see, because it taught me something about Janet Jackson and how like, oh, you're snickering at me? Well, I'm going to walk out of the studio right now.
I don't need this. Yeah. And like everyone repeatedly saying how stubborn she was and how firm she was in her character, and then not really feeling that except for in that clip. It was frustrating.
Right.
I also felt a little let down and disappointed by, you know, how the documentary discusses sexuality. Well, the Rolling Stone cover, for instance, you know, she talks about like in retrospect, like she didn't like that, you know, that wasn't really her, how she was brought up. I'm like, okay, can we then jump forward to the song Would You Mind?
Yeah, where right.
Basically, like
the
orgasming
lyrics
on
ever.
Stage.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, but then also contrast that with like, you said that she was, I know that you said she was never an interview queen, but the one time she was, do you remember her wild beef with Madonna? Because she used to just call Madonna, like early interviews, she would be like, you know, I don't really need to show my nipples and stuff, you know, to get attention, et cetera. And it's like, that's when she was, you know, really sort of like ballsy and like felt like a Madonna or Whitney, like speaking about her contemporaries. But that part of Janet quickly was whisked away too.
I would compare that, in fact, to Jennifer Lopez, who famously had that Movie Line interview in the late 90s where she like says, you know, is Madonna creative? Yes. Can she sing? No, or whatever she said. And it was like, whoa, what happened to that? After that, Janet was like utterly diplomatic from then on. But there were hints of things in this documentary, namely in the candid footage, that made you think like, oh, we almost got a piece of the Janet we know nothing about. But by the way, you know what was really nice to see? Rebe Jackson appears to be doing great.
Yes. Okay.
That woman is 70 years old. She looks fabulous.
She looks better than me.
She's like, she seems to remain God-fearing. Great. Whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, also, I have a question about Rebe Jackson. We both know the song. We all know the song Centipede, right?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Iconic video.
Guys, I have a question. What is the centipede in that song? The lyrics are like, I need to now look up the lyrics to Centipede. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to go on this tangent, but it's suddenly important. Like a centipede that's hot, the fire is in your touch. Just like a centipede, you've got a lot of loving to touch. Okay, we're going through the chorus now. When the time is really right is when the centipede is crawling. You'll be crying in the night so many tears and you're crawling like a centipede. Is this Dick Centipede?
You know, I thought it was a dick, but also I'm feeling like she's talking about herself in the third person.
Because
she also says, centipede, you came, to strike him with your touch, like you crawled into the bathroom window to bite him with your love. Is she the centipede?
Maybe. All right.
Also, centipedes are not notoriously vicious animals or hot ones. So I just want to know. And also, I don't believe she wrote it. It has to be like a Janet or Michael endeavor.
No. That's got to be. I don't think this is from her poetry collection. No, I don't think so. But
who's
anyway.
Centipede and who?
Yeah. Where's that Aretha jam?
Yeah. Oh, the song was written and produced by Michael. And the Weather Girls sing backing vocals on it.
Oh, that's are amazing.
Are they the centipedes?
They're the centipedes. Right. If you combine all the legs of these people.
There's plenty of suspects. Yeah.
Well, you know what? It sounds kind of creepy to say it in terms of Michael Jackson, but I'm just going to go there. This oral fixation that he has in writing songs for women about biting and eating, like the Diana Ross song that he wrote for her, Eaten Alive.
Right.
Is he giving Armie Hammer?
Is the truth? is the actual truth when Janet's like, my brother wouldn't do that? Is the actual truth that Michael never actually abused any children? He was eating them?
Oh, I see. Which is, of course, not abuse. Yeah.
Maybe he was a cannibal.
Right.
Yeah, he's putting them out of their misery.
That's the big secret, okay? Wow. He was eaten.
What was thrilling him?
The original Yellow Jackets, right, yes. Another thing I want to say about Janet Jackson. So she had these first couple albums before Control, where she allegedly didn't have control. Guys, Dream Street, that song is a bop. I'm sorry. I think that needs to be on the radio a little bit more. I know it's sort of like talking about Alanis Morissette's Canadian albums, like we pretend they don't exist. But that song had something. It sort of is in that Shalimar vibe.
You're like, Joe Jackson being a slave driver wasn't the worst. You know, some good things came out of it.
Is that what I said?
No, I have my, it's a complicated feelings that I have. Without Joe Jackson, we wouldn't have the Jackson 5. Without Mr. Williams, we wouldn't have Venus and Serena. Or Mr. Knowles, we wouldn't have our women that we love. So it's just, it's a toss up. It's a trade that you got to make.
And
so
she is very
men
kind
are
of
necessary.
There you go.
Some people got to be abused for us to have good music.
And she's very kind of doting on Joe Jackson too. That was interesting. Like, she kept emphasizing that he loved them and like he wanted the best for them. And that just doesn't gel with the world's understanding of Joe Jackson. But
yeah,
I will also say that If It Takes All Night on Dream Street is about.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
If we reignite this part of her career in a TikTok way, we will have done, well, not much, but something. Yes.
Anyway, we'll never really definitively get probably a Janet Jackson doc until long after every Jackson heir is dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, an unauthorized one.
Because, you know, Paris ain't letting that shit happen either.
No.
But I will say, I'll share my thoughts about MJ the Musical once I see it. But honestly, Janet the Musical is the one I want to see. It doesn't even have to be her story. Ooh. You know, I'm just like, that her music is perfect for a jukebox musical.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Oh, no. And it all follows one through line, really. Like, even though she goes through different styles, like, it gets a little poppier later on, or R&B or dancey. Yeah. It really does feel like there's something about Janet that's extremely unified over a career. And also, she really comes from an era of quote-unquote vocalists I'm just obsessed with, which is, you know, Lisa and Paula Abdul, the squeaky girls, you know.
Yeah.
Jody Watley. Yeah.
And I would also say that, you know, as much as Michael has influenced like music and dance, et cetera, you know, and you see it in a lot of the movement of our current pop stars and, you know, people that we grew up with, I would say that as a through line, the people who are like Broadway dancers, choreographers, like video dancers, like their dance comes from Janet.
Totally. Oh, my God.
And their inspiration comes from Janet. So to see choreographers on Broadway and like dancers like cutting up to Janet music every night would be iconic.
Total. Also, by the way, I do wish the documentary specifically got into that, the influence of her type of dance, the aggression she brought on stage and stuff. And by the way, they didn't make use of all the amazing celebrities they had in this either. Like, you only got like a blip of Missy Elliott talking about Janet Jackson, or you got at the end Samuel L. Jackson playing Throb on his phone and being like, this is the best club song. I mean, that gave me more life than the entire last chapter.
Yeah.
You know,
overall, it was too much Jermaine Dupri, honestly. Yeah. But what I wanted to see so much was like the Rhythm Nation video, which was clearly inspired by like Blade Runner and Fahrenheit 451, like these strange things that her creative team was pulling from. The fact that they predicted the black kid anime obsession in the Scream music video before anybody even knew that we were going to be obsessed with Japan. The what's it going to be? Every video music video now that has any inkling of futurism is based off of that Busta Rhymes video. Like,
totally.
Where is the part where we talk about how iconic she was and how everything she did percolated its way into modern culture?
Totally.
That is the part that I also think was missing.
I want the Paula Abdul Janet Jackson documentary. Like Fosse Verdon. Fosse Verdon,
yeah.
I want Abdul Jackson.
Oh,
okay?
Yeah. Wow. Including, people forget that it was in fact Michael who scouted Paula Abdul at a Lakers game. So wow, it's that whole intermingling of people is so fascinating. By the way,
Paula, where they had the footage of her at the game.
Oh, so
with the
good.
Girls. That was so beautiful.
Paula Abdul, by the way, has about 45 seconds in this documentary and she is weeping through them. And I just want to say that it sort of seems like she cries often. That's what it seemed like.
You would too if you lived under the abusive claw of MC Scat Cat.
Oh, God.
He's pulling his suspenders, wanting those royalties.
He's like, two steps back, bitch.
All right.
When we're back, it's all the keepers we kept teasing during this episode.
Oh, yeah. We'll actually talk about them.
And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode, Keep It. Y'all, it has been a minute. All three of us here for the Keep It segment.
Whoa. Let's keep it cynical and mean.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. I usually come to this with a lot of contempt in my black little heart. By black, I mean not the color of my skin. I mean the actual hue is darkened.
Like the Grinch, yeah.
Like, yeah.
Aida totally wants you to know that she's light-skinned, okay?
Yeah.
I'm
come
not,
on,
don't call me black.
I'm cosplaying as a black girl. I have some happiness, but it's going to be disguised as anger.
Right.
So let me just start with mine. My keep it is for Rihanna going and getting pregnant by this Swedish ex-convict, ASAP Rocky. Lord Pretty Flaco Johnny, who I love. I really do love, but I am very disappointed to see that my girlfriend went and got pregnant without telling me.
Right.
Rude. The pregnancy reveal. The keep it is to her getting pregnant and not telling me. Okay, there we go. We've moved past it. That's the anger. Let me now just talk about these beautiful photos. This pregnancy reveal had me gushing. Of course, Rihanna, our streetwear maven, chose to reveal this perfectly. She is in this beautiful, like, pink parka, but it's
vintage Chanel.
You've all seen the photos.
Yeah, it's vintage 96 Chanel.
I'm going to call it an Andre Leon Talley tribute. That's what I'm going to call it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You can call it that.
she is traipsing through the snow, like, you know, like all, you know, classic R&B videos from the 90s, holding her lover's hand. All of the, like, the all the necklaces and, like, crucifixes, like, dangling over her chest like Madonna's, like a prayer cover. You know, it's gorgeous.
Coronation jewels. She put on her jewelry just to go to the bodega. She really did. she and ASAP Rocky are on their way. They're marching through the streets of New York City. And I don't know if you guys remember this, but the very first music video that Rihanna and ASAP Rocky did together was actually for Fashion Killer in 2013. That was also Virgil Abloh's first music video that he directed. And I wonder if any of them at that moment just could tell that in the next 10 years it was going to be a little baby between the two of them. But also, another side keep it. Fuck you, Rihanna, because now this is making me want to get pregnant. And I'm not a mogul and a billionaire. And I don't have time for that right now. My career is just about to start. So stop. But it's just a beautiful thing to open Rihanna's internet and see Rihanna's baby. So
I've heard a lot of this, actually, that seeing Rihanna pregnant like makes people be like, wait, is it my turn now? Like,
seeing your auntie or your big sister getting pregnant, and it reminds you of the passage of time, and it's like, damn, well, if it's her, it's soon got to be me. And it looks fun. She makes it look cute.
I love the reveal. I want to give a piggyback off of your keep it to the people who, there's always got to be a contrarian take on the internet, right? And people were making simple jokes about like, damn, we're never going to get that album,
right?
I want to say keep it to the people who wanted to make these screeds that are like, y'all are out here demanding Rihanna make an album, but she decided to find happiness in another lane, and that's what you all need to do as well. I'm like, why does hustle and grind culture always have to find a way to make everything about them? Every single thing is about them. Rihanna deciding to have a baby and not releasing her album does not mean you need to write an essay about how we've been demanding an album from her and she decided to find happiness where she truly wants it.
P5FOFUM, here the capitalists come.
Also, it's like you figured out. Also, it's like you figured out nobody wants Rihanna to be happy. You know, like, right, nailed right. it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway, I've been working out a bad joke about her last project being anti-life and this one being pro-life, and that's it. And we can move forward.
You tell us how that comes together on the marker board. Okay.
Thank you.
Lewis, what's your keep it?
Somewhat micro keep it. It's not to RuPaul's Drag Race in general, just to this last episode where it was Night of 1,000 J-Lo's. Okay, a few things happened that discouraged me. One, J-Lo showed up in a pre-taped video where she pretended to be talking to the queens, and then they had to be excited about it, which is like awful.
The
TV.
Editing in that scene was wild.
Yeah. Also, just like screaming at a video. We're like not children. It's so strange. But the challenge is to like toast one of J-Lo's iconic looks. And can I tell you something? These queens got so fucking boring with it. Everybody took like J-Lo's quote unquote iconic looks from things like, I don't know, like award shows you've totally forgotten about. And every single one of these looks was simply an event appropriate look for an award show. It wasn't, there was no wit in what anybody chose. I know I've brought up these episodes time and again, but when they did like the Night of 1,000 Madonnas, I think the second time, when Valentina did the look where she's dressed as naked hitchhiking Madonna on the side of the road, and like the clothes, quote unquote clothes she's wearing, are the censorship bars over her breasts and pelvis. That to me is like drag. That's like funny. It's a point of view. It's an iconic Madonna look. You're adding something to it by making it into drag. And here it really confronted me with what I think a problem about Drag Race that the show is continuously trying to solve, which is they want polished, rich-looking looks, except that's also sometimes not drag. So when you get like a great-looking dress that happens to look like an old J-Lo look, I don't know that I'm watching drag anymore. I'm just watching somebody who acquired a good dress.
Yeah, I hate to be one of those people now, but like even watching this week's episode, I was like, damn, they really don't do anything in the workroom anymore, do they?
You know? Exactly. It's like, right. Mm-hmm.
They're just picking from dresses that they've already brought there. And it's like when you used to watch people have to construct something for a challenge, it was fun. And right.
And I know that's not like really the assignment of drag necessarily. And it's a lot to ask of queens to put together a look every week. But man, like just coming in with one queen straight up had the like the 20th anniversary of the green Versace dress that she wore at some recent runway thing. And it's like, So you just have the money to acquire this dress, like that's drag,
or the connections, you know?
Yeah, it's connections.
Like,
yeah,
I mean, well, clearly the connections, because Kerry Colby was like, "I can't get this ruined."
Yeah, right. Oh yeah, she was forced really to lip sync and she didn't move in it. Yeah,
Which and I thought she totally lost that lip sync by not trying to do anything with the dress, but you know they weren't going to get rid of one of the most gorgeous queens I've ever seen in my life.
Totally.
I liked Willow Pill's interpretation.
Man, Willow Pill, yeah. Very funny. Very funny.
Yeah, very mm-hmm. funny, but not even a single look from one of like J-Lo's videos either.
Right.
But the pics were wild. I'm like, there are iconic J-Lo looks like in music videos that
yeah.
you could have picked.
Where's the Kangol hat? Yeah. Where's the, you know, or just like, where's the Fly Girl look? Where's the, everyone just straight up went with like things you can like find on E! Online, you know?
I would have loved like an interpretation of like, you know, the Jenny from the Block, you know, like paparazzi after her. That would have probably been a bit like the Valentina thing. But
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the J-Lo video that was in the beginning of it, like the pre-recorded thing that she was interacting with the queens with. I get that it's COVID now and like you still want to have like celebrities, but I don't. It's not interesting to me watching like Scarlett Johansson or Anne Hathaway like zooming in to an episode of television that you're filming.
At least Anne truly interacted with them. Like she took yeah. their questions. But like this J-Lo thing, I mean, it may as well have been a hologram from, you know, 100 years in the future or something. Ira, what is your keep it this week?
My keep it, you know, goes to this entire Spotify versus Joe Rogan drama.
Oh, yeah. It is quite ongoing.
Talk your shit.
It is. And I mean, and listen, I have gotten paychecks from Spotify.
Mm-hmm.
This podcast is released on Spotify.
I've seen it.
I don't hate Spotify. I don't hate Spotify contractually. But I would say I just find it very funny, everyone who has like a defense of Joe Rogan's like, you know, like misinformation or whatever, it always goes to this insane level. Like there's one argument that people have where it's he's an interviewer, so what you really don't like is people, you know, like that he interviews, you know, and it's censorship and etc. And whatever side you fall on it, it's really that debate again where like people are defining what censorship is in a way that is not censorship. Deciding like where you want your music to be or like how you want to spend your dollars isn't censorship. It's literally mm-hmm. capitalism. Mm-hmm. It's the free market. And that is the system that we've built up in America. But they hate it when you actually use that system to
use it, to
utilize it, you know? So conservatives hate that. And I can't even call him a conservative.
Right.
He's not one. Mm-mm. He's a librarian.
No, when you wear t-shirts that tight, you can't be all the way Republican. It's just true.
You know, and he doesn't consider himself one. And it's also just so uncomfortable to me because, as I said last week, you know, like I've started finding this man attractive.
No, that you would drag this
that's
up
fair.
Again. Well,
okay, thank you, fair. Aida.
I missed this. Ira, I'm back. The Joe Rogan apologist is in the building. Oh, I've been silent for thus long. Listen, he's cute. He's not ugly. He's not hideous. He's not hideous. Here's the thing, though, with Joe Rogan. I think he takes too many like biodiverse vitamins to be dumb. I don't think that he's a stupid person. I think that the people that come on that he allows in the effort to like support free speech, he ends up allowing a lot of dumbass fucking people to come on his podcast and say a lot of dumbass fucking things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's.
He's Pirelli from Sweeney Todd, okay? He is allowing people to come. He is letting people. He's actually not the snake oil salesman. He is giving snake oil salesmen a platform to sell their snake oil and making exactly. money off of that. You have to be very smart to do this. And
I'm getting Nightmare Alley vibes from this. Yes.
Mm.
And Ira wants his miracle elixir. Talk about that.
Girl, I would. Okay. Are you kidding me? When I was watching news radio as a kid, he was one of the hottest men
he
on
was
TV
very,
to
he
me.
Was very
he
hot.
He was so fucking hot. And I also
with or without hair.
With he was
no,
so
with
fucking
with
hot.
Or without
yeah, yeah,
hair.
Oh yeah.
At the time with, but even now.
Yeah. And I also want to say that I was having drinks with someone, and I brought up Joe Rogan being on news radio and being like a comedian as well. And they had no concept that he was a comedian or had been like an actor before.
Oh, and the host of Fear Factor.
Yeah, remember my shock when I found out he hosted Fear Factor. Yeah. That was caught on Keep It.
Yes, right.
Yes, you know, like, so I just want, like, is he only just like a podcast host to people now?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Certainly.
Except for the older people who go and see a stand-up, which, you know what, I can admit is not funny. I laughed at some of Triggered, but I was like, you know, this is dumb comedy.
Wait, which reminds me, this is an offshoot conversation. A friend of ours was talking with this young friend, our new young friend we have, and he invited my friend, who is also a Jeopardy alum, over to watch Jeopardy. Okay, he goes, after Jeopardy, there's this show on that's just like Wordle. Was this man talking about Wheel of Fortune? You will not be defining Wheel of Fortune through Wordle.
How
absolutely
young?
Absolutely. Probably like 25. So it's like right behind
me. There's no excuse. I know. There's no fucking excuse not on Wheel of Fortune.
I have a 1989 TV Guide with Vanna White on it, and I cannot wait to throw it at him. I am so excited. So those anyway, children don't know.
Those would be some really good paper cuts.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
1989 paper?
Yeah.
This shit was heavy.
Yeah.
I had to explain the yellow pages to a young child the other day. Ugh. So I said something like, let your fingers do the walking. And they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, oh, God.
Yeah. People barely know slogans anymore.
People.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right. I think there was some thread about the yellow pages when people were talking about J.K. Rowling being, quote unquote, doxxed by just people protesting outside of her home. And someone was like, I would like to remind you people of the yellow pages where you could just literally look up anyone's number and address.
And I abused it. I love the directory. I love finding a crush on a directory.
It is wild that we literally used to know where, like how to contact anyone.
Oh, yeah.
And how to find them.
Yeah. Why was that available to us? We were strange. We were an innocent time. That's what was going on.
Yeah.
Anyway, those are my thoughts. And, you know, I'm not pulling shit from Spotify because I'm not Brené Brown.
It was amusing to me that it was famous Canadians initially. It was Neil Young and Joni Mitchell.
It was.
I was like, go off Anne Murray. Attack Gordon Lightfoot.
I didn't get off Netflix when Monique told me to do it. So I don't know why y'all's little white drama is going to affect me listening to my playlist. Bye. I just don't think we deserve net neutrality, and some safeguards need to be put up, and we'll get there when we get there. I think there needs to be someone in the Bureau of whatever of information listening to every Joe Rogan podcast and deciding which parts can be uploaded. That's it.
It should be Taylor Swift. But she's going to get to this podcast first.
Right. I love George Orwell advocate Aida Osman on here.
What am I saying? It's giving Ayn Rand.
You know what's
anyway,
crazy
read
too?
Anthem. Bye, guys.
Yeah. It was crazy. I was talking to someone really young about Ayn Rand too, you know, and they only remember her from Sex and the City.
Right.
They didn't even know she was an author.
Anne Rand.
This is like, it's very Wordle. It's giving Wordle again.
All right. That's our show. Yeah. Thank you to Moses Sumney for being here. Allegedly, we will all be back next week again.
All right. Fingers crossed.
Keep It Is Back, y'all. And don't forget to rate and review the show. It's really helpful to us, you know? So go and do it.
Yeah. Get out there, you Pauline Kales. Rate us. Review us.
We have to be doing better on the charts than Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Please.
Please. Thank you.
We'll see you next week.
Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our senior producer is Kendra James. Our producer is Caroline Reston. And our associate producer is Brian Semmel. Our executive producer is Ira Madison III. But I, Louis Fertel, do a good job too. Our audio engineers are Charlotte Landis and Kyle Seglin, and the show is mixed and edited by Charlotte Landis. Thank you to our digital team, Matt DeGroot, Nar Melkonian, and Milo Kim for production support every week.
In moments like these, it's easy to feel overwhelmed and even easier to feel powerless. But we are neither. I'm Stacey Abrams, and on my podcast, Assembly Required, I take on each executive action, legislative battle, and breaking news moment by asking three questions. What's really happening? What can we do about it? And how do we keep going together? This is a space for clarity, strategy, and hope rooted in action, not denial. New episodes of Assembly Required drop Tuesdays. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube.